The Legal Lowdown on Kerry Today.
Yeah, Miriam McGillicuddy, solicitor, is with us for the Legal Lowdown again. Miriam, thanks very much for joining us again. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Jerry. Thanks for having me, and good morning, listeners, and thanks for all the queries.
And we have lots of queries.
Yeah,
they have been flying in, so we're going to get straight into them. Question is from a listener: if a deceased estate is both in the UK and Ireland, and the UK part goes through UK probate, does it then have to go again through Irish probate?
Yeah, it depends on the assets, basically, in Ireland, the extent and the type of Irish assets. And if the assets here are in joint names, and if the bank accounts are below a certain amount, one may not have to take out an Irish grant of probate. One may be able to operate with the certified copy of the will, certified copy of the UK grant of probate, and the death certificate. But I was trying to check this up this morning, but definitely, if one has to transfer over the title on Irish land, then you would need the Irish grant of probate for the land registry, because they expect the Irish grant of probate and an assent based on that Irish grant of probate. So that would then require one to take out an Irish grant of probate. But it's a fairly straightforward procedure, and you'd use your UK grant of probate and all that kind of thing. So just one might have to, depending on the circumstances, is the answer there, really.
Yeah. So it's without getting too technical, if you do it in England, you could be okay, but if it's land, the land thing has to be sorted out through, like, one can't take precedence over the other if it's in two jurisdictions the assets are held.
No, and you see, that that UK grant of probate would apply to transferring on assets in the UK and Northern Ireland probably as well. But in relation to the south of Ireland, the 26 counties, if it's transfer of land which is straight from one owner to another with an assent, then one may have to get out the Irish grant of probate in relation to that. I suppose when one looks at the two, say there's assets in both jurisdictions, one looks first of all whether one has to take out any grants of probate at all. And in some cases, you might be able to get away with maybe taking out the one grant of probate, depending on where the major amount of the assets are. But if somebody has a lot of assets in both jurisdictions, the reality is one has to take out the two grants of probate.
Okay. Miriam, can you ask Miriam, my parents died in the 1990s. My brother moved into the house as he had nowhere else to live. My brother passed away several years ago. Then my oldest sibling passed away a year later. That only leaves me and my sister. Neither my mom or my dad left a will when they passed. I wanted to keep the house and pay my sister half of what it was valued. I had to do probate as the house and land was still in my grandmother's name. I paid for this and I became the executor of the land. Now my brother's daughter is after coming up with a will that my father seemingly wrote and was signed by people I don't know, not a solicitor. Where do I stand now?
Yeah, a very complicated family situation there that is outlined. Well, one goes back to the registered owner, and the registered owner is the grandmother. So she's the person who was originally entitled to the land. If she made no will, then her interests devolve equally, initially to her spouse, who we presume is deceased, and then to all her children. So strictly speaking, they're all equally entitled. However, people have lived in the property for long periods of time. So the question is, has possessory title being accrued by the parents who continue to live in the house, and maybe by the brother who continued to live in the house? The question is, how long did each of these people live in the house? Even if the father has made a will and it's valid, what interest did he have in the house? And presumably,
if he did nothing, could he just simply, by living there for a certain number of years, have ownership of the house, or would he have had to have registered it in that time?
Ideally, he should have applied for possessory title to the land registry if he's claiming it that way. But remember, the legal title is with the granny. So even if one wants to apply to the land registry for squatter's title, one may only get a kind of a possessory title. So he mightn't have... at the end of the day, I suppose what I was saying is that if they don't have the 12 year, if the executor and her sister don't have the 12 years occupation themselves, which presumably they don't, the parties really need to sit down and do a family arrangement. I mean, when she took out a grant to Granny's estate, there were a lot of interests involved in that estate, and she's the legal person who's in charge of managing those interests, as it were. So I was going to say to seek advice from the solicitor who dealt with the grant, Granny's grant, as it were, as to how best to deal with the situation and the different rights of, and interests involved. And it probably involves doing a kind of a family arrangement. But one always goes back to that, like, the root of title is with Granny at the moment.
Yeah.
And it has to...
That has to be resolved and looked into, and legal advice has to be gotten to see where they all stand.
As to how to transfer on the title, and then the interests involved, who's entitled to what, and all that kind of thing. And that can be teased out with the solicitor who helped her in relation to the estate. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. John asks, hi, Jerry, can you ask Miriam, can land be sold where there's adverse possession in play?
Yeah, I wonder what in play means, what type of adverse possession it is. Thanks, John, for that. Basically, when selling property, one of the big queries that the purchaser will ask you is, will clear vacant possession be available on closing? And if one doesn't answer, you know, if one answers, yes, it will, and it isn't because there's some squatter in there, one could be liable to have the sale rescinded and have to give the money back, you know, like if it's an ejected product, as it were.
Yeah.
But if, however, one reveals that, yes, I'm selling this land, I'm giving you legal title, but there is the little matter of a squatter in the property at the moment, are you willing to accept that? And then the purchaser accepts that, then maybe it's okay. But I mean, you're not going to get your full price for the land. So I'd say John needs to maybe sort out the whatever the adverse possession is really before he puts it on the market if he wants to get full value for the land.
And the question is, you might be able to sell it, but who's going to buy it with adverse possession in play? You wouldn't have too many willing people on the other side of that deal, I'd imagine.
Exactly. And I suppose it's so hard to clarify what type of adverse possession and all that kind of thing. And it's interesting because when people are selling land, it goes back to what are the queries on it, and it relates to a lot of the questions that are asked by listeners here. They'll ask also, are there any boundary disputes? So one has to fess up on boundary disputes as well, so that before one enters into a boundary dispute, think about it seriously, because if you're going to sell your land, you don't want to get involved or have to admit to a buyer that you have boundary disputes as well. So there are two key questions that people ask when they're buying property, and you have to answer honestly, really. Yeah.
Okay, Miriam, a lady asks, is it okay to change a solicitor if one is not happy with the work of the solicitor? How does one go about this, please?
Yeah, I mean, one is entitled to move from one solicitor to another. One just pays the fees up and sends an authority to transfer the file to the new solicitor. So the process is very straightforward. But I would say that if maybe the lady is unhappy with the advice she's getting from her present solicitor, that perhaps before changing, because changing solicitors, like changing builders, is very expensive. You know, one might have one solicitor who's done a lot of work, and then you're getting a new solicitor to do maybe the similar work, and it might involve a lot of costs. So I would say before one thinks about changing solicitors, it might be a good idea to get a second opinion, or talk to another solicitor, have a consultation and see whether it's a good idea to move a file. Because one might be unhappy with the work, but it may be something small or something that can be trashed out without having to actually move solicitors, because it can work out a bit expensive.
Okay, all right. Miriam, and you talked about neighbours there and not having boundary disputes. We had an observation from last time you were on with us. A listener says, Jerry, in the words credited to Robert Frost, good fences make good neighbours.
Yeah, lovely quote. Robert Frost is a great poet, and that's great from a listener there. Thanks very much.
lots of meaning in that for everyone to think about this morning,
yeah,
that's for
exactly,
sure.
Yeah, that's it.
Jerry, can you please do a segment on the injustices of inheritance tax and how it discriminates against childless people, the LGBTI community and widowed people? Revenue and government rob 33% of your money when you die, even though those monies were taxed already. Worse, the same property can have inheritance tax applied to it multiple times as it gets passed from generation to generation. For example, Uncle Denise, who then leaves it to her nephew. Crazy how little people know about this tax until it's too late. For research, read Alan Shatter's opinion on Say What We Did. I think we actually had Alan Shatter on the programme. We had another listener as well some time back who was campaigning on this issue too, Miriam. It's a political question primarily, but that is the reality of the situation at the moment, isn't it?
It is, and I suppose we put a lot of blood, sweat and tears into working out how to minimise the tax for people when they're doing wills and all that kind of thing. And it is very tough. I mean, it is. I have to agree with the thresholds, particularly from aunties to nephews, nieces. You know,
they're very low.
They're very low, and one could say that it is discriminatory in relation to people who make a decision not to have children but have very close relationships with their nephews and nieces.
Or perhaps just couldn't have children.
Yes, exactly.
Despite their wishes.
That's right, exactly. So it is, that would be the very strong argument for raising that threshold. Now, we do have favourite nephew and niece relief if you're transferring on a family business, and I suppose there is the tax exemption if you've a niece or a nephew living with you, that they'll get a bit of benefit. But interestingly, also there's the small tax exemption, the 3,000 per annum, which is very handy for benefiting nephews, nieces, first cousins, friends, you know, and getting around the tax thresholds. And actually, one of the things that was highlighted when I was researching this area, and in one particular case, a parent was trying to transfer to a child and they were well above the thresholds and they were claiming they ring-fenced money for that child, 3,000 per annum over 20 years, but they ring-fenced it in their own account and the revenue wouldn't accept that. So in relation to the 3,000 per annum, it needs to actually be physically transferred to the person you want to benefit. Or you won't qualify, but it is tax-free. So that's something that people can use maybe to get around the thresholds. But I'm glad to see that there is movement on it. And each of the political parties, as a result of the pressure, have brought in kind of positive changes that they want to see in the tax thresholds. So hopefully we'll see that coming into effect down the road. I mean, we already saw the thresholds rising in the last budget. Alan Shatter would argue it's not enough, it's not in line with inflation, not in line with the price of houses. But at the same time, if we see more improvements, hopefully in the next budget, and if there's enough lobbying and talking about it, the politicians will
listen. The pressure increases and they will respond. We'll see what happens in the budget 2026, which is coming up in the next month or so. Next 2 months, I should say. Miriam, stay with us. We have more queries to get to. We'll get to those after we take these.
The Legal Lowdown on Kerry Today.
The Legal Lowdown, and Miriam, we have a query in here who says, can you ask Miriam how to deal with this inquiry? As I bought my site and built my house back in 2004 approximately, the solicitor I was using at the time has since retired and the files were sent to another solicitor, but I went recently to make my will. I was told the property was still in the previous owner's name. How do I go about sorting this and get the deeds done in my own name?
Yeah, I mean, the files that went to the other solicitor, they'd need to be examined, as there may be transfer documents on the file, and those transfer documents can be stamped and registered then. If the deed of transfer is lost, it may be a new deed of transfer needs to be signed and then do the stamping and registration of the document. The only other avenue would be a possessory title application, because she's obviously in the house since 2004, to the land registry, you know, to say she's there more than 12 years. But the problem is that mightn't give her a legal title, in the sense of might be a possessory title only. So she'd be better off getting a transfer from the original registered owner. And usually there should be no problem. I mean, if it's acknowledged the site was taken out of the land, provided the original registered owner is still alive. But even if they die, their personal representative could do the transfer at this stage. But it is important she gets it sorted out ASAP. Yeah.
very important that that happens, and it's put in the right name before any more time goes by, particularly when she's looking at settling her will in her estate.
Exactly.
Okay, more queries to get to. Miriam, a listener, says, do next of kin have 6 months or 6 years to challenge a deceased will? I read a newspaper last week, beneficiaries have 6 months following probate to sue an estate, but I'd always thought that beneficiaries had 6 years to bring proceedings.
Yeah, thanks for that, listener. Yeah, it's 6 months time limit from the extraction of the branch of probate for children when they want to bring proceedings to say they weren't properly provided for. So that's the 6 month time limit, and it's from the date of the grant to probate. Now, having said all that, if the grant to probate isn't being taken out, one may have to look at maybe citing the executor to try and force them to take out the grant rather than letting too much time elapse. But for all other beneficiaries, like nephews, nieces that haven't been given their share or grandchildren or whatever, it's 6 years to sue for the to make sure that they get the benefit. Usually an executor or a person representative is allowed a year's grace to try and sort out the estate, so one can't commence proceedings until after a year has elapsed. But obviously, if it's looking like it's down near the 4, 5, 6 years, moving towards the 6 years, and you're not getting your benefit, you might have to look at doing something about it to make sure the time limit doesn't elapse. The other time limit one has to look out for is if one is owed a debt by owed money by a deceased person, that one has only 2 years to chase it up. So that's something people need to be careful of as well. Another time limit.
Okay.
Yeah.
To bear that in mind. Okay. Another query, Miriam, on wills. If a person changed a will to leave everything to one person, and that person who gets everything doesn't want to take everything, can that person then ask to go back to the original will where two people were involved and divide everything between them? In other words, if they're not happy with the decision of the person willing it to them to give them everything, can they go back and say, no, I want to change that? Or would they have to give their half to the other person, incurring all sorts of tax, I'd imagine?
Yeah, well, don't you? You've put it in one there. Yeah, the problem is here that it's the most recent will applies, so that revoked usually the previous will. So one is stuck with the last will, leaving everything to this one person. You can do family arrangements and disclaimers. So one could look at that. So if the father left everything to one person in the will, that person could disclaim, and then it will go by intestacy, you know, as if the father had made no will. So then it might be divided between the siblings that he wants to
equally
benefit equally. So disclaimers can work very well to be tax effective. If, however, the father left the main bulk of his estate to one person and then did put in a residuary clause for the others, then a disclaimer will result in all the estate going to the residuary people and may cut out the person who's actually disclaiming. So one has to be very careful with disclaimers to see what impact they'd have and get advice on it. But one can work with them to be tax effective. The other thing then he'd be stuck with, if otherwise, would be he'd transfer half of what he got to maybe his sibling. I'm presuming it's the sibling, but again, there's tax implications there, and one would need to be careful around that. There may be other ways of looking at it, but just it needs to be looked at carefully to decide what to do if one wants to come to some kind of a family arrangement on it. Yeah.
Okay, and Tom asks, who's entitled to see or get a copy of a will? Is everyone who's named in the will entitled to a copy of it?
Yeah, it's really a matter for the executor before the will is probated. So the executor decides who gets copies of the will. And usually they would try and make sure that most beneficiaries have a copy of the will, so it's totally upfront and transparent. But there may be reasons, maybe like for data protection or other reasons, why they don't want to give out a copy of the will before it's probated, and that's their prerogative. However, once a will is probated, it's on the public record in an office, so you can apply to get a copy of the grant at that stage. Yeah.
Yeah, so once it's gone to probate or probated, then everyone can access it. If they pay a small fee, they'll get access to what it is.
That's it.
Okay, Miriam, if you've an agreement with this listener on a price for a case you are taking, can that price be increased without further discussions with the client?
Yeah, like usually all solicitors are supposed to give what's known as the Section 150 Notification of Proposed Costs letter. And that should set out what the agreed or proposed costs are. Sometimes those letters will include provision if there's increased work done, that it might be done and set out the hourly rate. So it may be already in the Section 150 letter about increased costs if there are certain increased work. But if it's not in the original Section 150, the solicitors are obliged to give a revised Section 150 setting out what the new revised costs will be in the light of maybe increased work or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. Listen, we've got loads more to get to. We are short on time, Miriam. But thanks so much for answering all the ones you've answered this morning.
That's great. Thank you very much, Gerry. And thanks, listeners, for all the great comments and queries. They're great.
Brilliant. Miriam Baker will be back with us next month for more of the Legal Lowdown. Keep your questions coming in and we'll store them up and pass them on to her in the meantime.